Welcome to the latest episode of the GVG Cast, where we hang out, chat with all of you, and see what's happening over the last week. I'm your host, Daniel Alba. I am joined by Derek right now. He's having a bit of a technical issue right now. We didn't want to hold the show any longer for y'all. I think he's slowly...
I might be off camera today.
Derek.exe not found.
I apologize.
we're slowly figuring this one out for Derek. I'm hosting the show. I'm running the show in the back end to make sure that the show happens. No offense to Derek and his machine.
Well, you know how we tried to do that 100th episode with me running the show? Yeah, still, it's not really working for me. For whatever reason, you go live on Discord, you try to bring up my video, or I try to bring up my video, and eventually it just freezes. Whole thing.
Oh, dear.
I don't know.
So we're going to try and make this work. Let me know, everyone in chat, how the audio sounds. I'm adjusting to hosting this more often, so I'm going to make sure that at least this part of the show goes smoothly. So,
yeah, I appreciate Daniel taking over for this, because my machine just for some reason just can't handle it anymore. It just decides to just crap out, and it's really annoying because I kind of need to use that. It's kind of necessary. So I'm not sure what to do about it. I've heard from some people that my GPU is just not great anymore. But I don't know if that's the core problem or something else is going on.
As Freaking Positron is saying, Derek is now talking to me through a cup and string. So, well,
does that mean my audio is not great? Or
oh no no oh okay, no okay, audio is fine. It's just the visuals for some reason just don't want to cooperate with us tonight. But we'll make the show work today. How y'all doing today? We are having a lot going on. It's been a week for news in general, good and bad. It sure. Seriously. It sure has been. But all this aside, what have you been up to, Derek? How's your week been?
It's been a week. You know, I don't think anything too bad, anything too great or anything like that. It's just been one of those typical weeks. Not really been, I mean, just trying to keep on steady for a bunch of stuff. But yeah, I'm trying to think back to it. Like, what have I done this week? And just like that stands out other than just the typical stuff I do. And I played a little bit more Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, a little bit. So that's always good. I played it for a whole hour, which allowed me to finish up Cloud's mini games in Costa del Sol, which I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'll be able to start continue the story. And then immediately go into Aerith and Tifa's mini games on Costa del Sol. And I gotta say, Red 13's Rocket League, it's a bit of a pain. I did it, but boy, that took me quite a few tries.
You enjoy Red 13 League? That was especially interesting to play, to find that was there. I am shocked. Like I go back to the original. I'm trying to think of the original Final Fantasy VII and how many minigames they had in that. And I feel like Seven Rebirth might have gone a little too hard with how many, the sheer mass and amount of minigames that are available in this. Like, I know it's kind of true to the original, but my God, does it like give you some tonal whiplash sometimes with how much is just there?
Just blows it out of the water. And it's like, well, I got to do these minigames. I got a special materia. I got Red's new weapon. Mm-hmm. And you got to get those abilities. And, you know, get some swimwear outfits for the crew.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
I love some of the swim outfits. And the Cloud's Chocobo shirt is one that I am especially fond of.
Oh, I immediately chose that over just a plain swim trunks. It's like, no, he has to be rocking the Chocobo shirt.
Yeah. Some of them were fun, though, like, for sure. Like, I quite appreciate the pirate minigame. It just throws me back to Resident Evil 4's minigame. It just had that same feel of shooting all the enemies on board the ship, but in a more like friendly environment.
is it just me? So, because, you know, it took me a few tries, but I also realized, because you have the option to use tilt controls for that. Mm-hmm. for whatever reason, if it's not on 3DS or Switch when I like when I play Splatoon, I can't do tilt controls. It just feels so unnatural to me, and I don't know why I have that mindset. And I was like, is it just me or is it everybody kind of like that, where it's just more feels more natural on a Nintendo console for some reason?
Yeah, I've grown so used to gyro on Nintendo handhelds ever since the gamepad with Splatoon 1. That was like where I first got like, oh wow, this is actually pretty intuitive. It's pretty amazing. And I guess there's a specific formula that they use that other companies don't really have quite down yet as far as like the accuracy of gyro. It does feel better like on the Switch Pro Controller especially. So I don't know. It's definitely, I'm sure someone like Steve might be able to break down why that might be the case, but...
Yeah, I can certainly see that. I mean, I can see it being better. And apparently, according to Cutie Caitlin, it works really well in Helldivers 2, which I've not played Helldivers 2.
Okay.
But I don't know. I could totally see it being just being the weird headspace type thing.
Yeah, that must be the case in some cases, because it might just be by developer. Who knows how well they learn how to integrate it. But yeah, I guess that's what you've been playing this week. It was just an hour of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Pretty much. And
Man.
Final Fantasy IV, I mean, and the games I stream, which is becoming more and more just Final Fantasy XIV, just because I'm trying to get to reach the Dawn Trail time. But I don't want to bog people down with that. I'm collecting yokai, though. Believe it or not, in the year of our Lord 2024, there is a Yokai Watch event going on in Final Fantasy XIV.
Oh my goodness.
Go figure.
That's amazing. Oh my God.
What about you, Daniel? What have you been playing?
I don't know why I kind of got pulled back into it. Probably because, well, one of the games I've been playing is F-Zero 99. I jumped back into a bit. I missed out on when the updates went live for introducing like more cups, the mirror cups. There's a lot of tracks now. There's the 15 standard tracks. There's 15 mirror cup tracks, which they're not exactly mirror. They do switch up like arrangements, the hazards and whatnot on those tracks. And then there's the 15 classic tracks that have the controls that are functioning like the original F-Zero. And yeah, it's been fun to go back into that. I've been enjoying just trying to get a first place and barely ever getting close to it, because man, people are really good at it at this point. Now it's still fairly active to get a lot of people playing that, and yeah, it's just a fun little thing to dive into every now and then. I think I'm almost caught up with John's level at this point, because he's also playing pretty consistently, more so than I have. But the reason I think I've been jumping into that so often is because I've just had my Switch on. I've been playing Unicorn Overlord more often.
Ooh, finally, nice.
Finally getting into that. Finally saving Scarlet and getting onto like the next major part of the story, where you venture outside the one territory that you've been exploring for all this time. And man, I'm feeling it, where they're adding a lot of characters. There's like one character per chapter or per like side mission that gets added onto your party. And they each have like different attributes, different strengths and weaknesses. Some of them can almost wipe out an entire squad on their own if you have the right matchup, or some of them can just get soloed by the enemy if you're not careful. So you have to really organize your strengths and weaknesses. I have at most teams of four happening now. And yeah, they keep introducing classes and characters. I'm just like, oh my God, I can't keep up with all this at this point. But it's been a good time. I've been enjoying the game. The art style is beautiful, as everyone probably is always keenly aware of with VanillaWare titles. And yeah, I'm going to keep on playing that every now and then whenever I'm not trying to work on a video on the sides and I'm still trying to to get things done for.
Yep, I feel that. It's one of those things where I set out like, okay, I finished Live Alive, and when I'm watching Kai, I just have a little bit of moments where I'm not like at my TV so I can play PS5 and Rebirth. What do I play on the Switch? And I was like, okay, I'll play Unsighted. And I played like the first hour of that and really enjoyed it, but I just haven't been able to get back to it. It's just one of those things where I had a lot of fun to it, but now I'm getting to the point, I was like, should I get back into this? Or should I just try to shift gears and try another game to just maybe progress a bit further into? Because it's been like almost 2 weeks now since I last played that. And right. that's just because part of that, I think, is just because Kai is a lot more rambunctious. He really likes to play now. Like, so he's home, I'm watching him. It's like, you know, watch this with me. You know, let's build it forward and all that stuff, which is fine. You know, it's like, don't mind playing with my son. It's just, you know, it's just, you know, not able to play as much anymore. So
that is the curse and gift of fatherhood. I've come to learn, notice Brandon himself is learning ways of doubling up, watching Ella and playing games on the side.
It's a lot easier when they sleep a lot more, but as Ella gets older, he'll reach my stage of like, no, dad, play with me. That you know, you don't get, it's not your TV, it's my TV. I'm gonna watch what I want to watch.
Oh boy. You will learn.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, speaking of Brandon, he's also playing a game that I want to get into, and I know a lot of people are talking about. Has anybody else out there been playing Animal Well?
Where did this game come from? Because all of a sudden, Indiepocalypse happens the other day. Indies come out, and everybody's talking about this thing called Animal Well. I'm like, where the heck did this thing come from? And it's just apparently one of the best games ever.
Yeah, I was surprised with like how many people have been hyping this game up all of a sudden. And I'm just like, what am I missing out on? I need to apparently jump in on that. And I remember seeing... like, it has a very distinct art style. I remember seeing that on, like, showcases and whatnot. But now that it's actually out, I'm just like, what's all the hype about? I need to get on that whenever I can.
I hear from a lot of people that it's best to go in as blind as possible.
Right.
It's one of those, I've not even watched the trailer because I'm like, okay, I will. It's on my wish list. I'll get to it at one point. You know, we'll just leave it at that. But then there's like all of the like Little Kitty Big City, Shell Shock, and Twitch is saying Vampire Survivors got DLC themed around Contra of all things. And then there's the other indie I'm quite interested in, which is that Crow Country, survival horror with the Final Fantasy VII aesthetic from the people who made Tangle Tower, which I love. So, where to find time to play that?
I know Arlo called it like Indie Day because it was just, it's especially nice to see in the sea of all the uncomfortable things happening in the community of games, all these indies come out and say, as if to say, it's all right, we got you. We'll get you with our own amazing titles coming out at the same time. And I don't know if it was planned or not in some way or form, but I'm very thankful that they are, in fact, all out there and people are having a good time with these. Yeah, it was wild. But I guess that kind of leads into some of our news topics, unfortunately, surrounding specifically the Xbox. As people know, the Xbox was shutting down multiple studios of very successful, well, very really acclaimed titles like Tango Gameworks, Arcane Austin, Alpha Dog Studios being absorbed. And absorbing Roundhouse Games into ZeniMax Online Studios, things like that, where it just baffles me, Derek. It baffles me that these things happen, and there are studios, and I think they were also in the works of having a Hi-Fi Rush 2 box
the time. So here's the thing that really sucks about all this is more and more information comes out, thanks to investigative reporting from Jason Schreier. There's a reason Arcane and Tango were chosen, it seems. It's because their games just finished, and they hadn't started any real production on the next games. So it's just easiest and cheapest that they didn't lose any work, as it were, to shut down those studios. Which is about the stupidest damn logic I've ever heard. You get something as... I've not played Hi-Fi Rush, but I know how acclaimed it is, and I do want to pick it up eventually now that it's on PS5 and whatnot. You finally have something that is so beloved. May not be a huge financial hit, but hey, word spreads. Sequel comes out. People are like, ooh, I heard good things about the first one. This one looks cool too. I'll check it out. You build on it.
The management decisions have been just absolutely insane, and I don't understand why it's happening like this in the industry, and in which we need to have more people making these titles to help the industry continue to flourish. Like, you've been in this business for so long, you think they would know, oh, you make games successful, people want another one, people invest into more developers and time and money to make said sequel, that becomes successful. And as you said, like, oh, if they see this, the critical acclaim of this game, they'll go back to the original one and probably play that one as well. It's an ongoing thing, but Microsoft is totally just thinking in the short term and just cutting out developers that are so talented. I play Hi-Fi Rush as well. That's an incredible title in art style, in character, in personality. I would love a sequel. And I don't understand. It's insane.
There's some interesting, like Moonberry Muffin in live audience has a very interesting point here, where can guarantee the reason Hi-Fi Rush wasn't a financial hit was it being shadow dropped with no marketing and available on Game Pass day one. And we really are starting to see the major weakness of Game Pass. If a game's available and you're paying for this service, why bother buying a game on that console? You just get it automatically. It makes sense from a consumer standpoint, but from a developer standpoint, there's only so much they can get from Game Pass itself, especially when Game Pass has kind of stopped growing. And Microsoft is even considering increasing the cost of Game Pass Ultimate again. So it's getting more expensive for the consumer because they're not making the money they wanted at first. There's this one thing where it's just like, cool, we just, people love this service. It's really drawing people to the Xbox ecosystem. But now we've hit that point that all streaming services hit. You reached your audience. They're not going to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, and one of the most asinine things about this that's come through here that some people have been mentioning in chat was the quote by Matt Booty saying how we need games, smaller games that, you know, have awards and prestige and that can sustain us. And that's I'm paraphrasing, like a day after they closed Tango Studios. And I'm just like, this is a case of the owner has a restaurant and he has these bakers all making cakes, and they're delicious cakes. Some of them are better than others. Some people keep coming back for them. But then the owner fires all the bakers, and then he says the next day, damn, I wish I had a cake right now. It's just it's so stupid. the thought process of this, it feels like every single one of these people have different mindsets and different priorities, and they're just causing the industry to just collapse in on itself. And it's terrible to see it happen like this.
Yeah, it is just dumb decision after dumb decision. And, you know, you think you'd want, like, Microsoft just went on this buying spree so they can have all this content, and now they're shutting down studios, which is what everybody expected. It's what happens when these studios buy a bunch of stuff, because all of a sudden you have these overlapping positions that you technically don't need anymore. And when they bought all those games in the last round, developers in the last round of stuff, you know, we still haven't seen some of the results of a lot of that stuff. Like whatever Microsoft is trying, it's not working. And it's just leading to this, you know, the whole thing with all AAA games at this point, they take a long time to develop. And you're getting less and less games out there now, which means you get less and less profit. So you need to have that one game you put out be a massive hit. And they were expecting that with Starfield and all these other things. But no, the one game that they put out that got a lot of attention is the one they sent out to just like, here you go, whatever. Here's a small title that we don't really have any faith in, but you guys can check it out. And that's the big, at least critical hit. So,
yeah. And I just don't know. Oh my gosh. And then what was I going to bring up here as well? Because did you see the other day Microsoft's immaculate marketing of Hellblade 2 coming as well?
I did. I specifically commented on this, where it was basically just Hellblade 2. Senua's, what is it? Sacrifice? Is it Sacrifice or I forget the Hellblade 2 coming May 19th. And I saw that and retweeted it and being like, boy, this is a bad look after the day after, because Senua's Saga, because it just feels like, hey, here's a game, whatever, play it, I don't care. That's really what it felt like to me. And I have seen since they've done a much better job. Check this out. Check out this stuff. Check out this. There was a more life to that advertisement. But that first one they put out after all this bad blood from the shutting down these studios, and it just felt like a petulant child.
It was like, is this a real tweet? I looked it in. It was literally the definition of that's it. That's the tweet, because there was like no effort into this whatsoever. This is another title. It's just going to go out to die, unfortunately, with the way that everything's been happening right now.
I am very worried for Ninja Theory at this point.
Yeah, this is...
because Hellblade 2, haven't we heard about Hellblade 2 since the moment Series X was announced?
It's been a pretty long time, though, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's one of those games that's been around for a long time, and... yeah, there's a lot of good developers in there, like Game Belt Summit, Obsidian, Vedron, right. Double Fine. There's a lot of really good games, good game developers. And what's going to happen to them?
Everyone's just walking on eggshells right now, wondering. And it's what hurts me right now is that there's a lot of games coming out that are excellent, right? And and yet, like, come the time of, you know, at end of the year, we're giving out awards for these titles, like Game Awards and whatnot, and other places where they, you know, show respect for the developers making these games. How many of them won't even be around at that point? Isn't that there? Some developers probably won't be there to accept their awards at the end of the year if things keep going downhill like this, and that is depressing.
I saw somebody tweet out with the Tango news was, I just gave these developers an award at this one show 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And just feeling numbed by that. It's like, what the heck?
I think one of the developers posted a photo of the awards and, you know, honors that it got for Hi-Fi Rush and saying something like, not enough.
Yeah.
God.
And that's the weird. I've seen quite a few people cancel, like, in just some form of protest, cancel their Game Pass subscriptions. And as Eastman points out, what do we do? Like, what's going to be the people's trust when it comes time for their Summer Game Fest? It's not related to Summer Game Fest, but essentially their E3 presentation, their non-E3 presentation, where they announce all the big games for the second half of the year or whatever they have cooking. Will people care? Because they just killed trust. Now, Sony's not doing much better, of course, but, you know, they're fighting neck and neck. It's like, oh no, we could be worse. Ah, there we go. We could be worse. And that sort of thing. It's like, what do you do? What's going to happen?
Yeah. As Grant in chat is saying, I canceled my Game Pass sub before all this, actually. Me as well. I didn't need
Same.
I realized that I wasn't really utilizing it as much in the first place. There's other ways I can enjoy these titles, and if I want to enjoy them, I might want to just buy them physically and own them instead of having a subscription service. And that's just the trap of subscription services. You just kind of forget you have them. They're idling there, and then you're burning a hole in your pocket that you could be using elsewhere for, you know, actually buying physical titles of developers that need the help. But yeah, that's that's a whole entire developing situation, unfortunately, and we're just going to have to wait and see just how it develops with other developers out there. Our heart goes out to all of you out there who are making games, who are in the midst of all this, if you've recently lost your connection to them as well, your studios, if you've been laid off, I don't even know what I can say. Like, I wish it was better. I wish the industry was healthier, because all you deserve
the thing is, It should be super healthy at this point. I saw a report from Capcom that showed that there was two images side by side where Capcom's like decided to give all their employees a raise, and they'll do all that. And now Capcom has did a thing where it's like their sixth or seventh year in a row where they posted a profit, and they expect to continue into the next year. Like, there's no reason not to.
Right.
Boy. Invest in your employees, make them happy, have them stick around, and all of a sudden you can get some really good games out there that people want to buy.
Who would have thought? What a foreign practice.
Man, how did the Japanese game industry figure this out? Well, it helps they don't have people that are just out there to just please stockholders. That's exactly what's happening right now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, that's a... I think we're done with a bunch of sad news for the time being. Getting depressed.
I'm sad now.
You know what company isn't having such dire straits right now? It's Nintendo, because Nintendo recently, this week, Furukawa took over the Twitter account. He yanked it away from Miyamoto this time, saying this is Furukawa. And they not announced the Switch 2, but they given us a time frame of when to expect the announcement within this fiscal year. Fiscal year we just started like a month ago, mind you. But this fiscal year, we will see what will become of the successor of the Nintendo Switch, whatever you want to call it. We're still calling it Switch 2 because I can't say successor to Switch very easily. And not only that, we have a time, not time frame, but we've been very, very early announcements of a June Direct that's going to be focused only on the Switch, the original Switch. So everything we're going to see from that till the end of the year, they've got something planned. We don't know what that could be, but we've got the Switch 2 on the horizon officially. We've got some videos on that on the channel right now. There's a whole discussion about, you know, the announcement with Steve and Brandon. We've got some specs announcements and the specs and like leaks. I don't know about leaks, it's just public information, but a breakdown with those two as well as Ash. But we haven't really talked much about it ourselves. So, Derek, what are your feelings on this? What do you feel? Is this the best way they could have announced a Switch 2? And just general thoughts on it.
Honestly, yeah, because everybody knows it's coming. It's not a secret. And it makes total sense to get out ahead of the curve. Okay, we're having a presentation. We're having a Direct. But it's not going to be focused on the Switch 2. Don't expect it. Just going with your tempered expectations. This is Switch focused. Here's what we're doing for the rest of the year. But the Switch 2 is coming within this fiscal year. So it keeps fans happy, keeps anybody that any shareholders during their presentation, you know, keeps those questions at bay, just gets out ahead on the what would likely be extremely common questions. And I think it also sets up what we can expect from the Switch 2, where I'd be shocked if Nintendo just doesn't follow the method they had for the Switch. Official reveal in September, talk it up, show the specs, get people excited going throughout the rest of the year, launch that bad boy in March. There you go.
Yeah, I've been thinking that way too. Like originally we were thinking it was going to be probably sometime this year until they've kind of pushed it back, but it does make most sense to just follow the formula that worked last time as well. This will be the final like truly dedicated holiday season for the original Switch right now. And yeah, some people were thinking like, is this going to be announced closer to the holiday season? Is it going to be, or is it going to be like released at next year's holiday season? Or is it going to be released near the time frame of the original Switch? I think that as well. I think we're going to see it sometime in the early spring, late winter, that March, April kind of time frame. Because I don't know how much longer depending on what we see on the Direct next month, I don't know how much longer the original Switch is going to be able to hold our attention with its titles.
I mean, fortunately for Nintendo, nobody else is really putting out huge titles. Like Sony's already announced, yeah, we got nothing big this year. Xbox is like, well, Xbox is Xbox. So yeah. Like Nintendo's sort of by doing nothing, lucked themselves into a pretty good year to actually prepare and launch their success, their next system. So who knew?
Yeah, there's been so much talk of specs and rumors and all this stuff coming out, and I think we're starting to put our ear closer to the ground as we start hearing more of these rumors now that we have a dedicated time frame to this. I'm curious, because I was curious about, I'm asking people this right now. What do you think, now that we know that there's going to be just a Direct for the Nintendo Switch, what could they announce in that time? Like what could we be expecting for like at least until somewhere until the end of the year holiday season?
That's a good question. I mean, one of the ones you could obviously go with is just Prime 4 finally. I mean, that seems to be the one. The thing I'm expecting is there's gonna be one big-ish title to carry the holiday season, but I expect everything else to be smaller titles in the same vein as that Nintendo World Championships NES edition. Games like that, I think, are going to mostly fill out the Switch's library. Maybe, maybe a last couple, you know, like Wii U ports or something like that, I think we might get. Or, yeah, Hi-Fi Lux, Metroid Prime 2 and 3 remastered, potentially. Or just, you know, ports, just straight ports of those in some way. Or the Zelda HD games is also possible. I think something smaller, because I feel like they're probably trying to save most of those bigger titles, or at least even mid-range titles, for the launch. So you don't want to have anything too big, but you still want to support the system. So that's the tricky thing.
Yeah, I think one of the only titles we have expecting that's not a remake for the Switch thus far is Pokemon Legends ZA. And that's one of the only ones like that could... That, there was talk of like, is this going to be on the Switch, only on the original Switch? Is it going to be a cross-gen platform? Is it going to possibly move over to the next console? I feel like that's something that they're just going to keep on the original Switch, personally.
Yeah, that tends to be what Game Freak does. They just stick with that older hardware because everybody has it. They don't need to, no reason to switch it over, especially if it's going to be backwards compatible. So there is that. And I forgot about this, but a lot of people talk about the rumored Fire Emblem remake, potentially. And that
I try to forget it pretty... at this point.
I mean, that would be make for a solid way to end off the year. A decent sized RPG that will probably get a decent amount of attention.
Yeah, it's hard to say because like there's so many Fire Emblem titles on the Switch already. I wouldn't be surprised if this just went to the next title to say, hey, launch window, we have a Fire Emblem title for y'all to play. It's a remake of one of the most popular ones in Japan, Genealogy of Holy War. So I could see it going one way or the other. I've tried to like stop myself from hyping myself every single time there's a direct to see if, oh, is this the time they're going to announce it? It's probably already done out there somewhere. So sitting and waiting in the wings, just like Wind Waker and Twilight Princess HD. Like, when are those? When are they going to break the window? And it's like emergency release when drought happens.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, what titles do they break out when? What titles work best for like a wind down season? In my mind, I could almost see a smaller Star Fox title working.
Oh yeah,
it doesn't have to be huge, but it's just do something. I don't know.
Got to get that Star Fox 99 cooking, just like F-Zero. Get those smaller titles, get people interested in it again. Toon G's saying Star Fox 64 3D HD. How many more titles can we put on?
There you go. I love it.
Someone call Miyamoto. We need to release Star Fox 64 again.
Honestly, I was thinking about that, Grant. Just make a new Star Fox with Assault as its basis. So basically, here's Star Fox 2 or something like that. Sure. Why not? That's what makes sense. Or here you go. Do what you did with Star Fox 64 for the original Star Fox and make a Star Fox 2 upgraded with all that stuff that you know, you have the game now. Just update that.
Yeah. There's so much possibility. There's so much potential for like what we can see happen on this system for the last, like its last year of life, which is weird to say that we can definitely say we're just in the twilight moments of the Switch at this point for as long as Furukawa said it was announced like 9 years ago or something as like the NX. What happened to time?
That's a good question.
What was I even doing 9 years ago? I was listening to you guys, your discussions back then. I never thought I'd be like speculating on the next wave of stuff right now. This is surreal for me.
Yeah. Life is weird.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We could get other remasters for GameCube and Wii.
Yeah,
there's a few other Wii U titles out there. There's possibilities, but what will they choose to do? Is this better for the Switch or is this better for the Switch successor? I don't know.
Hard to say. Gosh, it's so much in the air. Like Metroid Prime 4 is just in a realm of obscurity and a complete unknown as far as is this going to be on current hardware, next hardware. I'm thinking it's just next head of hardware at this point. They're saving some big guns for the launch window of the Switch 2 at this point. So
Yeah. If they do remaster something specifically for the Switch 2, what would it be?
Remaster for the Switch 2. Oh my goodness.
What would sell systems even if it's just a remaster?
Gotta pull out that Ocarina of Time. Just back to the original.
That would be something. Ocarina of Time remake.
Oh, that'd be crazy.
Haven't seen what Grezzo's been up to, so there you go.
Grezzo. What are you doing, Grezzo? Let us know. I love the stuff that you make, even if it kind of cause you to just only remake other games, but still, they do it in such a fantastic way that I wouldn't mind if we saw that again.
I'm trying to think of like another like a big title to get everybody excited for just a remake or a remaster.
I'm trying to think of something that was like on the 3DS. Get that Kid Icarus out.
It's one of those. Yeah, there you go. The Kid Icarus would be a nice showcase. Honestly, I don't expect it to happen because it's something that'll get fans excited. But would it actually sell systems and all that? If they not Mother 3, but an actual Earthbound remake in order to lead into Mother 3 and do like the clay style that they do for the promotional artwork.
Oh man, like if
Switch 2 launched with an Earthbound remake, courtesy of Goodfeel, let's say.
If you got like a mix of art styles between that clay original like promotional art for Earthbound, but also blended with like Link's Awakening on the Switch art style, because that little Link already looks a lot like he popped right out of a Mother concept art sort of style. Man, that'd be amazing. That's something that I would just love to see that. There's so much you could do with that. I mean, we've seen, was it Curiomatic was working on the mock-up of a Mother 3 with some incredible graphics for that. Like, oh my gosh. There's so many different titles I wish I could see on be remade. But that's definitely one that I think we can work with.
I think so. Like, I'm trying to think of those like beloved Nintendo games that just haven't gotten a lot of love. And it really comes down to Kid Icarus and Earthbound that I think that people would just kind of gravitate towards. It's just this wild out of nowhere thing that maybe mostly for big to hardcore fans, but the hardcore fans are like, okay, let's get it. Mm-hmm. And that just gets you into anything that get people in your ecosystem. And an Earthbound remake, a Kid Icarus remake, would certainly do that.
Yeah.
Maybe not a huge amount, but it would get them in there and word would spread.
I'm so down to see what they're working on once they're ready to announce this stuff. That's going to be like, it's like they're just, it's just a big swell happening. They're welling up with all these titles that we haven't seen right now. That's why there's a bit of a lull. And when that blows open, when that dam blows open, we're going to be busy.
Yeah, for sure.
In an ideal world.
I mean, one of the things they announced at this financial report that blew my mind, that their profit during the Switch era.
Yeah.
So since basically 2017 has surpassed their profit from 1981 to 2016, even accounting for inflation. That is how much money Nintendo has made these past, 8 years?
Yeah. Yeah, they've been rolling in it. I saw that graph. There's some dips in it during the Wii U era, but that graph was like incredible to see the heights it reached post Switch era and comparing it to everything before that. Like, they've struck something that can this even be replicated with another console that is carrying the Switch name? I don't know, but boy, that's probably one of the reason why they're keeping with this format, and they should stay with this format.
Oh, they should.
Because, yeah, I just that kind of amount of, I can't even fathom that kind of amount of earnings and money. It's crazy. Well,
we were always talking about the Nintendo War Chest even before, like during the Wii U era, where they're so successful and they keep money back in reserves that they're ready to go just in case of hard times. Mm-hmm. That thing is never running out at this point, unless they make some terrible financial decisions. But yeah,
hard to imagine that. Yeah,
yeah, I really can't see that at all, and. I mean, it's wild, and I'm glad they stumbled on a formula that works. if they could just hit certain aspects, I think I could keep that success running in the same vein that they did with NES to Super NES.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, especially because, if we'll be honest, outside of graphics, they don't have a lot of competition. There's not a lot of good faith for the other consoles right now.
Yeah. It's a dicey spot right now for everybody. But hopefully Nintendo will instill some faith that there are companies that can still do some good by the developers and just titles themselves. I don't know. It's it's rough to witness right now and be a part of.
Yeah, I have to imagine the big goal for Nintendo is just to be able to handle the big new games that are coming out that the Switch itself just can't handle. So for Switch 2, you'll be able to get your Tekken, your Street Fighter, your Resident Evil 4, your maybe even Monster Hunter Wilds or whatever else is in the pipeline, that just be able to handle those games so it could be on their system as well. Maybe not as pretty as it is on the other ones, but it's portable. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, given the specs that we've heard come out that I've had translated for me via our discussion the other day, I'm excited to see like what kind of fidelity of what the fidelity of these titles are going to be coming out on here. Like, we're going to get some pretty good looking games on the Nintendo Switch 2 as far as what we think. Mino Green saying, "Be gone, cloud games. Let's leave the era of cloud."
That would be really nice if the people who bought cloud games on the Switch were able to just get those games as like set physical titles or digital titles, actual digital titles, for the Switch successor. Mm-hmm. That'd be really nice.
I love that. Oh my goodness. Well, was there anything else on this topic, on the subject of Switch 2, the next year's coming Switch titles in Direct that you wanted to make a note of before we move onward to our patron topics?
Not especially. I think that we've pretty much covered all the major beats.
Yeah, I was looking at our news topics and I was like, oh, we pretty much just bundled most of this together as it stands.
We really
already did.
The only thing we haven't really talked about is that they've announced a new Tears of the Kingdom Masterworks art book.
Oh, that's
and
right.
It got people talking for two reasons. One, here's some alternate hairstyles for Zelda.
Yeah.
Which I dig.
I like them.
Yeah. And they announced that they're going to be including an updated series timeline, which is like, all right, Nintendo's going to be throwing grenades into the fandom. Good luck.
Oh no, Nintendo, don't do this. Don't do this to yourself.
That is good luck explaining that, because the original one is how we got the whole like, oh no, there's actually three timelines, three splits, not just two.
Lord help us all. Hylia, please don't let this be another bloodbath on the Zelda community.
Oh, there will be
blood. So for anyone that hasn't seen the haircuts, I'm a connoisseur of this sort of stuff. Hold on. I want people to tell me, what hairstyle do you like most of these? We're going to go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I want to know what taste we have in the audience right now. Look at these wonderful... I'm going to cover you, Derek. Sorry.
Zelda's haircuts or more.
I want you to... Audience, which hairstyle do you prefer on your Zelda? Let me know. If we go like from top left to right, 1, 2, 3, 4, bottom left to right, 5, 6, 7, 8.
See, I am partial to 6, 7, and 8. 7 because it reminds me of a Link to the Past Zelda hairstyle.
Yeah.
7, it's hard to deny a good pixie cut. And 8, I mean, I know people call it the Karen, but I always like the little bit of hair flip over it. So it's very Rosalina-ish, and I like Rosalina's design. So yes, let's do it.
That swish, yeah. Yeah, oh man. They're all really nice. Like, it's hard for me to imagine Zelda without, like, the braid going across at the very least. So a lot of the ones on the top row, the ones that I'm feeling, I think they... It feels like the first one was the first one that they landed on, because their hair is, like, the longest of that, of all of them. So it doesn't really look too different from the rest, but... Yeah, it's just funny to see this in like an official capacity. A lot of people are saying 8 as well. People like the swish.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad people like the swish. I started getting weird when everybody started calling it the Karen. I'm like, no, don't dismarch it.
You can't speak of our princess in such a way. Show some respect, people.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, I just wanted to bring this up just real quick because I'm running the show today. I can show whatever I want on here.
You can. You have control. I'm at your mercy.
But yeah, that's pretty much the bundle of news we had for this week. We're going to move on to our patron topics. If you'd like to contribute to our patron topics, you can do so if you are so kind as to join our Patreon at the executive producer tier, I believe. That's the one, right?
I honestly, I've lost track of which one it is that gets asked questions.
But, I've lost track as well.
It might be producer tier.
Producer tier. I'm not a very good host, everybody. Can you tell? I'm still whining. I'm learning.
That's why I never mentioned tiers. Just join up and take a look at all the tiers that we have.
Producer tier. Thank you. I definitely am responsible and know what I'm talking about. But yeah, we've selected two patron topics this week. Derek, what is your patron topic for this week?
All right. Mine comes from Dan Alpha Lion saying, hey, all, I just finished watching Castlevania Season 1 on Blu-ray. And yes, it's as good as an adaptation as everyone was saying it was. But one moment that really made me cheer to myself was the death of that season's main villain, especially after that season builds them up the way they did. And so I ask, what villain's death in a game, TV show, movie, or whatever was super satisfying for you to witness unfold? And I thought that was pretty interesting just because there is that moment of like defeating them or taking them down or just seeing how it goes. Oh, just finished binge watching season 2 as well. Good. Season 2 is excellent. Season 2 I think is better than season 1. So just a character that you really felt heck yeah about. I had it in me and I was like got myself thinking about, no, it is Castlevania related. And people who've watched my streams for a long time should remember me going through the entire Castlevania series and just playing every game out there. And there was one moment where I felt like they did a proper build up, especially just because of we were getting close to the end of all the games. And it just felt like such a culmination up to that point that I just got so into it. And that is Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2, when you have the boss fight against Death. It is such a wonderful moment, a great fight in and of itself. And the other fun part of it is Death in that game is voiced by Patrick Stewart. And Patrick Stewart is awesome. Not that I want to, hurt Patrick Stewart, but he makes for a good boss. And was definitely just very hell yeah about that. I'm sure there's more out there as I think about it, but what comes to your mind first, Daniel?
Oh my goodness. I'm thinking to myself real hard about this because there's so many different ones I can probably bring up to mind. A lot of the ones in Final Fantasy come to mind because there's just some such great villains in that series, and just seeing them fall apart is very satisfying. I can think of I love the build-up just to Kefka at the very end, and just to see him achieve literal godhood, this literal clown, and then just bringing that apart. That the whole build-up to the last fight, leading up to the final, like just ascending the literal heaven to fight him. It was just really satisfying. Just so many in Final Fantasy. This has come up, killing Seymour. God, Final Fantasy X. It was personal for me because what was it? Seymour Flux that you fight in like the snowy area. There's something about that one. That's not even the final time you fight the guy, but that one in particular was a pain because I couldn't figure that fight out. I kept dying, and you had to keep going back, and you had to watch the cut. This was the PS2 version. You had to watch the cutscene every single time. You can't speed it up. And yeah, getting to the very end and just finally getting this guy off the face of the earth was very satisfying for as much of a creep as this guy was. But those are some of the ones I'm trying to think of. I'm sure I could think of more.
I have to pull from One Piece because I remember the first time I watched it. It was one of those hell yeah victory moments where Crocodile in that series, where it's the first time you've really felt that Luffy can actually lose stuff, and he does start losing fights in the first couple of rounds, and things are just getting more and more desperate. Things are just about to be at their utter worst. It is just on the brink of just a complete, like, genocide almost, really. And Luffy uses his own blood in order to be able to hit this guy, and then just unleashes this series of punches, like one of his signature attacks, and punches him through like several feet of just solid stone through this, like, because they were in a underground area, punches him up through the ceiling into the air, just completely knocking him out. It was just, I remember the first time, I just being like, yes, let's do this. let's go, as they say. That's an excellent one. As for just amazingly slimy villains that you like to see, that there's actually one that just came to my mind that's pretty recent. There's a side story in Final Fantasy 14 that actually has to deal, that deals, that found a way to work in the weapons from Final Fantasy 7. So you fight Ruby, Emerald, Diamond, gotcha, and recontextualized. But the villain of that is one of just the most vile examples of a villain I've ever seen. He's creepy. He has these kids around him that at all times, and he forces them to whip his prisoners, just trying to like corrupt them. And it's just like, oh, you want to see this guy get taken down. And when you finally do it, it feels real good.
Man, those are so sad. Those are always very satisfying. Oh man, I can't, it's still spoiler territory, but there are some villains in Final Fantasy 16, since you brought up Final Fantasy again. There's some in 16 that are just like, yeah, I'm just glad to get, I'm glad to get this character out of the picture.
Right. I need to get back to 16, but I'm still early in, but I've defeated one. I'm trying to keep it as vague as possible, mm-hmm, but I feel like that victory came too quick. I honestly wish that character had stuck around a little bit longer.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot happens in that game. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on the rest of it as well.
Yeah, that's my goal after Rebirth, but who knows how long that's gonna take.
Rebirth. It's all, Sephiroth does it all for his mother. But speaking of mothers.
Yeah.
My topic.
Good transition.
My topic comes from Marathon Max. Thank you. Saying happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. GVG crew, who are some of your favorite video game moms? And Jarek and I briefly discussed this beforehand, before the show started, and we were thinking of moms, and we're just like, oh man, a lot of these moms die, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, oh yeah, Cloud seemed to have a pretty nice mom. Oh. Genova's not a very nice mom.
Aerith's mom seemed like a nice lady. Oh.
Well, Aerith, yeah.
But yeah.
Her stepmom. Well, not stepmom, but adoptive mother. She's nice.
She's still kicking. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
nice. Speaking of 16, not a nice mom.
No. Probably one.
No,
of,
that's not a good mom.
Probably one of the worst moms that you think of. for a legitimate answer, one I did think of in between then and now, Toriel from Undertale.
That's actually one I came up with too. Toriel is like the mom.
That's like one of, yep, that proves it right there. One of just the epitomes of care for you mother. Undertale and Deltarune in both. Very caring and kind and loving, and just wants to make you some nice pie. And yeah, I've thought about that game a lot recently, and just if you know, you know. With Toriel as well.
Yeah, I played Deltarune recently, and still a good mom there. Still excellent mom in Deltarune. So it's just what Toriel's good at.
Still waiting for chapter 2 and chapter 3 and 4 and 5 and all that, so I can have more mom time.
You know what? I'm going to make a bold prediction. I don't know why I think this, but just a gut feeling I have. I'm likely extremely wrong, but I'm going to say Deltarune chapter 3 and 4 announced at this June Direct.
Oh man. Toby Fox, what are you up to? I just want to know. I know you're waiting to compile and put these out in bigger chunks, but oh boy, am I excited and anticipating to see what happens next, because it feels like at this point, every time another part comes out, I got to play every chapter leading up to it again, or I'm going to forget what happened, what I should be aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's an interesting choice from PK Deluxe in Twitch chat. Five Volt, my beloved.
Oh yeah.
That's a good choice. Cause she's nice, but she supports her son, but she's a little, you know, heavy, strict when she needs to be.
Yeah. You know, she just go into lioness mode whenever the boy's not behaving well. We got Cooking Mama. I'm thinking of mom, like actual moms now. Just want to mix food for you. Everybody, mother.
I'm going to use a technicality because she's a mom by the end of the game. Alicia, Valkyria Chronicles. You don't get to see her act as a mom, but she's cool all the entire time. But I will save Alicia just because I like Alicia.
I do respect a game that has like canonical ships and pairings and endings for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Alicia's a great choice. Yeah.
I'm looking at all my games on my shelf, like moms, where the hell are the moms?
Where are the moms that don't die canonically?
I mean, I guess technically Sora, but we don't really know much about his mom.
We have like one or two lines and then that's it.
Amy's asking. It's funny. Amy just came in the room on the other side and was like, did you guys talk about, did you mention Toriel? And like, it's like, see, it's Toriel. It just, that is the mom.
Mother approved. Mm-hmm. Mother approved mom. Oh my goodness. We have Vanilla, Cream's mother, Vanilla the Rabbit. We don't see too much of her like at all.
We don't.
But I'm going to give you all a benefit of doubt. Good mom. Raised.
Oh, I just came up with one. Another good mom. Two good moms, in fact. The hero's mom in Dragon Quest XI.
Oh, yeah.
He has a great mom, actual mom, and a great adoptive mom.
That's true. So. Both moms are fantastic. Gosh, yeah. Dragon Quest is... That one, yeah, I'm trying to think of other characters that have their moms there, but Dragon Quest XI's mom comes to mind very much.
Mm-hmm.
Big feels.
I have Rusty, June Kazama. Yeah, June's a good mom.
we can count, as Haro Slib is saying, Rosalina as a mother to the Lumas. Also.
Oh, yeah. Good Any good mother. Fire Emblem moms?
I'm trying to think of ones that don't die. Your main protagonist moms don't stick around for very long. There's some in like the JoJo games that are adoptive mothers that are very good. That, you know, those are ones that stick around and they're part of your party. But yeah, technically, there's a lot of characters in there. You don't see them too often. Like in Engage, you see some of the parents of the main cast as well. Your own mother is there. Lumera,
yeah,
but things happen as well.
I don't know if it's canonical or anything like that, but a lot of people consider that Lynn is, you know, ends up marrying Hector. That's sort of, I think that's at least fan canon. So technically, she's a mom, but you don't see her at all in the follow up game because she was technically a new character for the prequel.
Yeah, you don't ever see the actual canonical mother of Lilina. But you can kind of, given the name and the facial features, you're kind of alluded to the fact that this is Lynn's child, but it can go either way for sure.
But that also begs the question, where the heck's Lynn?
Where did she go? If there's ever a remake, I'm sure they'll integrate that back in because that was just a character they made up for Fire Emblem 7. So.
Oh, I'd love to see Mom Lynn come out and it's just like, all right. time to like, you're messing with my daughter, we're taking care of business now.
not in this house. Yeah, so many great moms across video games and series alike, but there's definitely a subset of mothers that are very good, and there's some that aren't very good. But let's celebrate the ones that are to be celebrated for this Mother's Day. Tell your mom Happy Mother's Day this Sunday, everybody. Go out somewhere nice, have a nice dinner, get them a good gift, some flowers, and pray that they don't turn out like the one in Final Fantasy 16.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I think that just about wraps up the episode with episode 102 of the GVG cast. Thank you all for joining us today. Gosh, what is the outro like at this point? Because I got a little frazzled trying to put everything together. I do have credits.
We do have credits this time. Usually we have to thank our producers, our lovely producers. Without this show, it simply would not be possible without all of them. So thank you all.
Thank you so much.
I can't see right now, and I'm not live, so I can't see your thing. So I don't know if the producers have all gone through, but thank you all. We do appreciate each and every one of you. And then there's the extra special thank you to the executive producers.
Thank you to the executive producers. I'm going to read this directly from the window itself. So we've got executive producers being Brandon Bovia, Cutie Caitlin, Bangs, Z Patty, Sky Blue Flames, Eastman 23, Adam O'Sullivan, Richard Herrera, Logan Daniel, The D-Pad, Blake, Joy Content, Angel Martinez, Vidron, Joshua Hunter, Benny Yao, Azran127, Black King, Joseph Rutkin, Kiki Griffin, Lucky Wonderfish, Whatsaniac, HotDog23100, Young Ben Kenobi, The Couch Kids, Andrew Medeiros, Darchi, Becca, Ikaro, Dark B Andy, ESAX08, Michael McCall, Matthew Wong, Goron Amber, Too Much Spaghetti, Bane400, Ascaron809, Ryder, Rain and Clouds, The Game Orb, Super Gamer Dude 101, Mercury, Ravelox, Rosa Pardo Bulling, hi C's Mom, Dark Seal 01, Jason Uola, Jaden Buck, Cystic Warrior 29, DJ Drew, oh gosh, it's scrolling too high. It's gone too fast, everybody!
Oh no.
Let me grab the actual I tried to keep up with it and I was like, am I gonna be able to keep up with the entirety of the credits as it's going along? But I probably should have actually grabbed the credits themselves on here. I'm sorry, everybody. We are doing our best out here.
I think you're still making a wonderful host.
Thank you, Derek. I appreciate you all the time. Let's go back to Cystic Warrior 29. DJ Jurassic. My apologies, everyone. Super Dank Awesome Unicorn Guy. Dariq. Colin. Blaze Star 25. Twilord. Mumbling Yeti. Aaron Sharp. Heal. Brandon Hesse. Hustlebun. Noah Fitterer. Calvin Atkinson. Brainchild. The Entire State of Wisconsin. Jim Wakelin. Z Laker. Aramis Baramis. Kyle the Monarch. That Alpha Lion, Lord Metarex, Blaze Collard, Eric, Eddie V Person 5, Peyton Thiel, Mega Beatman True Blue Reviews, Ryan Hanley, The Game Jamie, and finally, Zombie Joe. Oh my goodness. But thank you all so much for tuning in to episode 102 of the GVG cast. I promise we will get the technical things ironed out at some point or another. But thank you all for being patient with us. And yeah, stay tuned to more on GVG, Good Vibes Gaming on YouTube for all the fun stuff that we have prepared for you coming. And just thank you. All right, everyone. Thank you all for tuning in today. Take care and have a good night. Till we meet again.
Bye.